from deep inside your radio.
Specifically from the studios in Seattle, Washington, of our one of the many stations on the Le Show Network, KXOT. Delighted to be here. And it's definitely not summertime in Seattle, ladies and gentlemen. It's there's definitely no brush fire danger in Seattle today. I want to thank the people who showed up. First of all, before anything else, please turn your cell phones and pagers off. I think, you know, we in radio deserve that as well. Deserve your full attention and, you know, the absence of distraction. So do that for us, won't you? And no hugs, no handshakes. I've said that in public appearances ever since last Saturday when in Melbourne, Australia, an intoxicated fan came and squeezed me on my recently operated upon shoulder. Ouch! And nonetheless, despite those warnings, a couple people here in Seattle at bookstore appearances sat down for photographs and squeezed me on the shoulder, you know, just to let me know they're my pal. No hugs, no handshakes. Thank you. I want to thank the people at a couple of bookstores in San Francisco Bay Area, Cody's and Booksmith, and Elliott Bay Bookstore here in Seattle for the lovely appearances this past week, signing copies of my novel, which just happens to be out in paperback. Who knew? Not enough Indians. And as well as my CD, which apparently is nominated for stuff. Who knew? Anyway, I'm amazed, ladies and gentlemen, that if 30 years ago you had placed a couple of seemingly obvious bets, you would have lost your shirt. Bet number one, on the night when John Belushi and Joe Cocker squared off in a dueling Cockers sketch, most people would have bet that Belushi would have been the one alive today. And second bet from that vantage point is that as between chain record stores and independent bookstores, it would be the former that would have survived. Yeah, what are you going to do? I'm delighted it turned out this way. And I just want to pay tribute to one of those bookstores I was at in San Francisco, Booksmith in the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood. All three bookstores that I mentioned are lovely, wonderful, tempting beyond all measure book palaces. But as far as I know, Booksmith in the Haight-Ashbury of San Francisco is the only bookstore to have, in addition to all the obvious sections that other stores might offer you, a complete shelf of books on the subject of altered states. That's how you know you're in San Francisco. Ladies and gentlemen, the hotel business burgeons, an old Newsweek word, with new ideas all the time in amenities for your room. These are, when they talk to us, the customers, they're called amenities. When they talk to stockholders, they're called profit centers because most of the amenities they charge for. Although I'm glad to note, a lot of people say that there's not enough egalitarianism in the United States. There's not enough redistribution to try to even up the income divide. But the hotel industry is playing their part because the more expensive your hotel room, the more they charge you for internet access. You know, a Holiday Inn, they give it away. A Ritz-Carlton, $15 a day, please. Now that's helping. That's helping the class divide. But anyway, at the hotel I'm staying at in Seattle, they've entered new territory in the world of hotel room amenities. A bottle, you know, it'll be charged for on your bill at a rate they don't really bother to let you know about. They just say it'll be added to your bill. Don't worry about it. A bottle of, quote, personal oxygen, you know, because the community oxygen just isn't good enough anymore. You need your personal oxygen. No, I didn't. A note remaining from Australia, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if, the cliche is always that they're sort of like the United States minus 20 years. And it seems in one respect, at least, that's true. Because you know how newspapers here have been shrinking in width? I don't mean nerve. They lost that right before the war. But the just page width, they've been shrinking so as to save trees. No, to save money. And in Britain, all the what are called used to be called broadsheet newspapers have gone tabloid. I think to save money and also because the kids don't want to, you know, stretch their arms to turn the pages. In Australia, those newspapers are still wider than an RV. It's ridiculous. So I guess they have trees to kill down there. An answer to the question asked obsessively on this broadcast in recent years. This from New Scientist this week. Scientists have finally confirmed that flu spreads best in cold, dry weather. I knew one day we'd know. Scientists may finally know why winter is flu season. It appears the virus lasts longer in cold, dry air. And our sluggish, cold weather mucus, I'm sorry, this is New Scientist's writing, cannot clear it out. It has taken until the publication of research this week to settle the basic question about how flu spreads. See? I was right. We didn't know till now. And why it girdles each hemisphere every year during winter. The research was made possible by the rediscovery of a report by Army doctors in 1919. Flu is hard to study in the lab because virtually no lab animals get it. Well, now, you don't think we could screw around with the DNA of mice and make them catch flu? And they don't catch flu from each other. The most useful animal in flu lab work has been, any guesses, hands? The ferret. So Rudy Giuliani, you were wrong to ban them. However, studying disease transmission requires too many animals to be practical with ferrets. They're big, expensive, and they bite, says Peter Palese of Mount Sinai Medical School in New York City. Well, of course, they're also illegal in New York, thanks to Rudy Giuliani. But in 1919, U.S. Army doctors in New Mexico reported that the flu pandemic of the previous year had killed their guinea pigs. We didn't know guinea pigs got flu, says Palese. They are no longer popular lab animals, and no one had tried them. Did you know that guinea pigs were no longer popular lab animals? They're no longer guinea pigs. Palese's team exposed hundreds of guinea pigs to a human flu at different temperatures and humidities. It settled a long-standing dispute over whether flu can spread solely as an airborne infection or whether physical contact is needed. It spread just in the air they exhaled, says Palese. Guinea pigs with the flu neither cough nor sneeze. So, I guess they're more polite in addition to everything else. And, ladies and gentlemen, in case you're worried about the safety of your nuclear waste, relax. The mafia's got it in hand. Italy's anti-mafia squad has launched an official investigation into allegations of illegal trafficking and disposal of nuclear waste, as well as clandestine production of plutonium by managers of the Italian National Agencies for New Technologies and the Environment. Well, that's a good idea to put those two under one agency. That's reassuring. Eight former employees of the research center in a southern town of Rotondella and two alleged members of a mafia family are under suspicion following a decade-long inquiry. In the 1970s and 80s, that research center specialized in nuclear waste processing and storage. A mafia informer told the Anti-Mafia Bureau that a manager paid the mafia to get rid of 600 drums of nuclear and toxic waste from Germany, France, Switzerland, and the United States in 1987. The mafia disposed of the radioactive material at unauthorized, non-secure sites in southern Italy, the Mediterranean Sea, hey, swimming looks good, and Somalia. Investigators also suspect the center illegally produced plutonium during the 1980s, which the mafia allegedly sent to Iraq. And we're worried about Iran. Hello, welcome to the show. Who's we, Kemosabe?
It's not because you look so fine. That ain't saying too much. It's not because we're falling in love. Baby, I don't need that crutch. It's not because you're playing games. Mama, I don't go for that. Wanna know the reason why I keep giving you the eye? Let me tell you where it's at. I just want you cause I want you.
Cause I want you.
I just want you cause I do.
From the caffeine capital of North America, Seattle, Washington, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. By the way, our normal home at the Le Show Dome fielded a report this week that the number of homeless people living in the home of the homeless, Santa Monica, in the streets of Santa Monica, that is to say, dropped by nearly a third over the past 2 years, according to the city, thanks to, quote, better counting methods, unquote. Meaning, they count only every other person. That's better. Also, of course, they were repaving the streets and some of the homeless. No, they didn't. They weren't. But now, well, interesting. Let's start that from the beginning and see how it sounds. Now, the apologies of the week. Won't you?
We're so sorry.
Dateline Bangkok. A Thai school has apologized to an international Jewish human rights organization for its sponsorship of a celebration that involved a Nazi-themed parade. Always a good idea. The Los Angeles-based Simon Wiesenthal Center said a group of students at a school in Bangkok that I can't pronounce chose to dress as Nazis on Sports Day, an annual event held in September. Photos from the event showed about 200 students dressed in red outfits with swastikas on their baseball cap behind a large sign with Nazi in shoulder-high letters. Yeah, but red outfits? That sounds commie to me. Some students at the school wore elaborately stylized stormtrooper uniforms, carried fake rifles, or performed the Sieg Heil salute. It's always fun. According to the center, school director Kanya Kamananan responded with an apology, said the Nazi celebration happened mainly due to a lack of oversight. Sounds to me like they overlooked the whole thing. The teacher responsible has been removed from his position, and the school has since held lectures and discussions on the Holocaust. Call to the school by a wire service reporter went unanswered. Dateline Wellington, New Zealand, renowned U.S. environmental crusader Aaron Brockovich has forced a New Zealand retailer to drop a controversial ad because of an insulting reference to women. Brockovich was angered by an advertisement for an appliance retailer which said, quote, government says fridges are better younger, just like women, really. She is currently doing commercials for a sister company of the appliance retailer, New Zealand's largest electronics retailer. I called the parent company, which owns the refrigerator appliance company retailer, and expressed my outrage and my disappointment in them for running such an advertisement, she told the New Zealand Herald. The company was reported to have apologized for the advertisement, which it said was meant to be cheeky and irreverent. U.S. lawmakers apologized this week to a Canadian engineer for his seizure by U.S. officials who took him to Syria, where the man says he was tortured in what he called an immoral American anti-terrorism program called Extraordinary Rendition. Maher Arar appeared before a joint hearing of House subcommittees by video because the U.S. government still has him on a watch list, even though he didn't do nothing. Let me personally give you what our government has not, an apology, said Representative Bill Delahunt, Democrat of Massachusetts. Let me apologize to you and the Canadian people for our government's role in a mistake. Arar said he was grateful for the lawmakers' apologies, but hoped the U.S. executive branch government segment, you know, the branch that Dick Cheney's not a member of, would eventually apologize to him officially. Let me be clear, he said. I am not a terrorist. I am not a member of Al-Qaeda or any terror group. I am a father, a husband, and an engineer. I am also a victim of the immoral practice of extraordinary rendition, he said. The Canadian government has also apologized to him and agreed to pay him almost $10 million in compensation. But, of course, it's Canadian money. By the way, it's reached virtual parity with United States money. That is a parody. Dateline, speaking of Canada, Ottawa. A Canadian man was acquitted in the 1993 death of his niece after an investigation nixed a dodgy pathologist's findings of murder and sodomy that were used to send him to prison for 12 years. That sounds like a great TV series, doesn't it? The dodgy pathologist? Kind of a CSI sitcom kind of a thing? Don't work on it now. There's going to be a strike. William Mullins Johnson reportedly broke down in tears after the appeals court apologized for his wrongful conviction. It destroyed me, it ruined my name, it ruined my reputation, it ruined any opportunity I had, he said. A review of several of pathologist Charles Smith's cases found that he had come to questionable conclusions in 20 child autopsies, including 13 that resulted in criminal charges. The Dodgy Pathologist, Fridays at 8. Ellen, speaking of entertainment, Ellen DeGeneres. You know that whole thing? Have you seen any of that? She started a dispute with a pet rescue agency after she gave a dog away to her hairdresser because it did not, you know, behave well with her cats. In doing so, DeGeneres violated an agreement with Mutt's and Mom's Dog Rescue Agency by not informing them of the transfer of dog residency when the agency called DeGeneres to ask about Iggy. Iggy. She said she'd found another home for the dog. The agency sent a representative to the hairdresser's home last week and took the dog away. DeGeneres went public about the situation in tears. She said she did not read all the paperwork involving the adoption. That's why you have personal assistance, darling. She spent $3,000 having the dog neutered and trained to be with her cats. I would say most of that money went for the training because I can do neutering in my car. Really, call me next time. But the dog had too much energy and was too rambunctious. I guess assigned a piece of paper that says if I can't keep Iggy, it goes back to the rescue organization. She said, I thought I did a good thing. DeGeneres said, I feel totally responsible and I'm so sorry. I'm begging them to give the dog back to the family. Mutts and Moms, a volunteer nonprofit agency in Pasadena, does not have a listed phone number. That's a hip rescue agency. The Financial Times newspaper has apologized and paid libel damages and costs to Singapore's prime minister and the country's founding father after accusing them of nepotism. The paper ran the apology in its international editions, but not in the UK edition of the paper. The apology was to Singapore's Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong and his father, the former Prime Minister Lee Kuan Yew, now called the Minister Mentor. The Minister Mentor. Boy, that's almost as relaxing as personal oxygen. It related to an article headlined, Sovereign Funds Try to Put an Acceptable Face, that ran online and in the September 29 issue of the paper. We recognize the article meant or was understood to mean that Minister Mentor Lee Kuan Yew secured or was instrumental in securing the appointment of his son as prime minister for nepotistic motives. We admit and apologize that the allegations are false and completely without foundation. The apology continued. We unreservedly apologize to Prime Minister and to Minister Mentor for the distress and embarrassment caused to them by these allegations. We undertake not to make any further allegations to the same or similar effect, said the Financial Times. Ooh, sounds like a lawyer called them. The DNA pioneer James Watson apologized unreservedly for his apparent claim that black people are less intelligent than whites. Quote, I am mortified about what has happened, he told a group of scientists and journalists at the launch of his new book. I can certainly understand why people reading those words have reacted in ways they have. He says, to all those who have drawn the inference from my words that Africa is a continent is somehow genetically inferior, I can only apologize unreservedly. That is not what I meant. More importantly, from my point of view, there is no scientific basis for such a belief, unquote. He attracted a deluge of criticism for his comments in an interview in last Sunday's London Sunday Times, owned by Rupert Murdoch, reportedly saying, all our social policies are based on the fact that the African intelligence is the same as ours, whereas all the testing says not really. He was quoted as saying he hoped everyone was equal, but people have to deal with black employees, find this is not true. Ugh. Anyway, he's apologized. He says now that science should not be afraid of tackling controversial issues, but he did apologize. He did not clarify what his views on the issue of race and intelligence are, but he hinted that he had been misquoted. I cannot understand how I could have said what I am being quoted as having said. Unquote. The Times of London stands by their quotes of him. Officials at Milford, Connecticut's Jonathan Law High School have apologized for the use of a rap song with allegedly racist lyrics over the loudspeakers before a football game. The lyrics blaring out before Friday's game made reference to the Ku Klux Klan and it had racial slurs. Lyrics were from Public Enemy's Shut 'Em Down. Athletic director Frank Leisterborg says a member of the coaching staff played the song from an iPod and the lyrics were contained on a hidden track at the end of the rap album, recorded in 1991, and no one knew it was there. I bet Chuck D knew it was there. Leisterborg says all coaches are being instructed to be especially careful when playing music before games, especially rap music. I'd add one more thing. Turn it down. A top West Virginia state education official acknowledged that he used the phrase, quote, four-wheel-riding, dope-smoking, alcoholic rednecks, unquote, to describe a lifestyle that impedes student progress. But Kenna Seal, who heads up the state of Virginia's Office of Education Performance Audits, said he was not talking specifically about Lincoln County. I used those words, but I didn't call the people in Lincoln County that, he said. Members of the Lincoln School Board contend that Seale was harshly criticizing the county and have asked him to apologize. They added that Seale mockingly asked if they knew what computers were while talking about information available on the Internet. In reply, Seale said, I apologize for any offense taken to my presentation. I have the deepest respect for the people in Lincoln County and would never say anything intentionally to offend them. And he also apologized in his letter for the bluntness of the redneck phrase. So if you're a redneck, Jeff Foxworthy, you object to the use of the word redneck, apparently. A Staten Island middle school principal is being blasted as insensitive. We're in the deep underground of school apologies. Is being blasted as insensitive after reportedly forgetting the name of an eighth grader at her school who was severely injured in a textbook tossing incident, then referring to the teen as Spleen Boy. Linda Hill, the principal of Dreyfus Intermediate School, made the Spleen Boy remark this week during a faculty meeting. The teenager's name, now they refer to teens instead of teenagers now. Is that new journalese? The teen's name is actually Chaz Carvalho. His spleen burst after his classmates pelted him with flying hardcover textbooks earlier this month during a bizarre variation of something called the Quiet Game. Doctors removed his spleen 2 days later and used 29 surgical staples to reseal the incision in his stomach. A city Department of Education spokeswoman confirmed that Ms. Hill made the remark. The comment was inappropriate, but made at a closed staff meeting and not intended to be malicious, said a spokeswoman. The principal is apologetic. We do not anticipate taking disciplinary action against Spleen Boy, saying school lady. San Francisco's top-ranking Catholic clergyman apologized for serving communion to two men dressed as nuns during a church service in the heart of the city's gay community, an incident that infuriated, among other people, TV's Bill O'Reilly. In a letter posted on the website of the Archdiocese, Archbishop George Niederauer said when he offered communion to the two members of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, he didn't recognize either as wearing mock religious garb. He apologized for giving them the sacrament, calling it a mistake. He says in his letter, the manner of dress and public comportment of the sisters is deeply offensive to women religious and to the witness of holiness and Christian service that women religious have offered to the church and to the world for centuries. Members of the decades-old group dress in heavy makeup and elaborate headdresses to satirize the church and draw attention to a variety of causes, including gay rights and access to aid care. That's a refreshing example of a Catholic official apologizing for something other than abuse of children by the clergy, so we welcome it. Apologies for the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. This is Le Show. I'm waiting, ladies and gentlemen, for any national news media reporting on the election this weekend of Bobby Jindal. Of course, it would have been pronounced Jindal in his ancestral home of India. But for Louisiana, he kind of good old boyed it up to change the pronunciation to Jindal. Jindal, Bobby Jindal. I don't know if he did. Maybe his parents did it, but Bobby Jindal. But it's J-I-N-D-A-L. Anyway, his election as the first Indian-American governor of Louisiana, waiting, as I say, for the national news media to point out that the salient part of his background in terms of his election may not be either his party label or his ethnic identification, but the fact that he's a Rhodes Scholar and people in Louisiana finally had gotten tired of having dumb clucks as their representatives on the national stage. And, thought it might be a nice idea to have a smart guy on TV next time somebody wants to interview somebody from Louisiana. We'll wait for that. We'll wait for that report. Ladies and gentlemen, we haven't heard a lot about him lately. So let's welcome him back to the spotlight. Michael Jackson is in so much legal trouble. A judge this week ordered him to pay $175,000 in overdue attorney's fees to a law firm that sued him. Judge James Chalfant's order means Jackson's legal bill to the firm, Asco and Marar, now totals more than $430,000. The firm sued Jackson in February of last year, claiming that he didn't pay for legal services that it rendered to him. The firm said it had obtained, what were the legal services? It had obtained court orders to delay discovery in civil cases and kept information from being released during his child molestation trial. I'd pay for that, don't you think? That might have come in handy. He ungrateful? You tell me. In July, Chalfant said Jackson would have to pay the law firm $250,000 for unpaid fees. Jackson's attorneys have appealed that judgment. This week's award compensates the law firm. Just listen to this sentence, ladies and gentlemen. This week's award compensates the law firm for having to hire a lawyer to sue Jackson. The law firm had to pay a lawyer. Okay, then. Plus, a Bahraini, that is to say a citizen of the Gulf state of Bahrain, is suing Jackson for $7 million plus damages in court in London. It's reported the singer. When's the last time he sang? The one-time king of pop signed an agreement with a leading Bahraini to create a record company and was given a $7 million advance. The plan was for Jackson to record two albums, write and produce a live Broadway show, cast an album, and write and publish an autobiography. Yeah, I'd pay him $7 million for that. No, I wouldn't. The deal would have tied Jackson up until at least 2012, but instead of going ahead with the agreement, the pop star took the other way out and left Bahrain. The Bahraini, I believe it's Prince. No, Jackson is not being sued by Prince. Don't get excited. Nor even his son, Prince. The Bahraini Prince states in his claim that he supported Jackson for 12 months, including living accommodations for him and his guests, security and transportation, after he moved to Bahrain 16 days after his acquittal on charges of child molestation, in a case that the other law firm prevented some material from becoming public in, you see. He also paid for Jackson's lawyers. Apparently not enough. They saved him from bankruptcy. So now he's being charged with the money. But of course, he's not in Bahrain anymore. He moved briefly to Las Vegas, then most recently reported living in the Washington, D.C. area. Perhaps looking for someone else to pick up the tab, as suggested in this excerpt from my new CD.
I was dancing in Bahrain, singing in Dubai, but the princes had their meeting, and they waved me goodbye. A king off his throne, a dog in the manger, in search of a bone. Oh, please help the children, but where are they now? Now that I need
More things change, ladies and gentlemen. More they change. Now,
Los Angeles dog trainer corrections for you.
Rare feature of the broadcast, but this week I just couldn't help it. This is a correction from the Los Angeles dog trainer that just puts it all in perspective. The obituary of former Doolittle Raider, that was a group of flyers during World War II for the kids who are listening, Nolan A. Herndon, in Monday's California section, gave his nickname as Sue. In fact, he was known only as Nolan Anderson Herndon. In addition, his sons in the obituary were listed as Nolan A. Sue Herndon, Jr., and James M. Debbie Herndon. Neither son goes by those nicknames. Sue and Debbie are the names of their wives. From the Los Angeles dog trainer, ladies and gentlemen, always in search of the facts, however long it takes. This is an interesting story that came out in the Washington Post in the wake of the Attorney General designate's inability to say whether waterboarding is torture. Politically motivated, at the officials at the Pentagon have pushed for conviction of high-profile detainees at Guantanamo ahead of the 2008 election. That, according to the former lead prosecutor for terrorism trials at Guantanamo Bay. He says the pressure played a part in his decision to resign earlier this month, which you heard about on this broadcast. Senior officials discussed in September last year the, quote, strategic political value of putting some prominent detainees on trial, says Air Force Colonel Morris Davis. He said he felt pressure to pursue detainee cases that were deemed, quote, sexy, unquote, over those prosecutors believed were the most solid or ready to go. You tell me what's a sexy terrorism case, ladies and gentlemen, and I'll be ready to roll. Davis said his resignation was also prompted by newly appointed senior officials seeking to use classified evidence in what would be closed sessions of court, and by almost all elements of the military commissions process being put under the General Counsel's command of the Defense Department, something he believes could present serious conflicts of interest. He says there was a rush to get high-interest cases into court at the expense of openness. The Pentagon spokesman was not available for comment, or actually did say they would provide detainees with fair trials, even if they're sexy. Didn't say that. But might as well have a sexy detainee trial, ladies and gentlemen. I like the sound of that. The United States decided against striking Al-Qaeda locations in Pakistan last year because it was afraid the strike would destabilize President General Musharraf and his government, according to the Pakistani Daily Times, quoting Peter Bergen of the New America Foundation. He says, America has handed $10 billion to the Pakistani government since 9/11, yet the Taliban and Al-Qaeda remain headquartered in Pakistan. A U.S. military official in Afghanistan with access to intel information told me this spring, says Bergen, that Taliban leader Mullah Omar is still in Pakistan. And a Western official based in Pakistan told me, Bergen adds, that target folders about the locations of high-value Taliban and Al-Qaeda targets were provided by the U.S. government to Pakistan late last year, but were never acted upon. The New York Times, not as late as the L.A. Times, but New York Times a little late in discovering Pakistan. The scenes of carnage this week after the bomb attacks on Benazir Bhutto's return to her home country conjured, according to the New York Times, what one senior administration official called the nightmare scenario for President Bush's last 15 months in office. Some would say that alone is a nightmare scenario, but the office official continues, political meltdown in the one country where Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and nuclear weapons are all in play. Play! That's all it is. Play. Nice of them to notice that Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and nuclear weapons are all in play in Pakistan now. White House officials insist they still have confidence in Musharraf, but other current and former officials caution the administration had invested so much in his success that its leverage was now limited. They and Pakistan experts say a series of policy miscalculations had left the administration with few good options. They were surprised by how quickly domestic support for him, General Musharraf, eroded and it was slow to act on warnings back in 2004 that it had built its policy around a single Pakistani leader. Benazir Bhutto, if she does get access to power, plans to purge her country's intelligence services of hundreds of agents suspected of supporting Islamic terrorism, according to the British newspaper, The Sunday Telegraph. Well, what would they be doing there? Nothing but good stuff. They've been there for a while. In a move that puts her in direct confrontation with the nation's most powerful institutions, Ms. Bhutto said Pakistan's security agencies had to become professional, free from political agenda. Foremost will be the, quote, according to the Telegraph of London, the notorious Inter-Services Intelligence, ISI, that is blamed for orchestrating much of the terrorist violence convulsing Pakistan and neighboring Afghanistan. Many, according to this conservative London newspaper, suspect it, this Pakistani intelligence agency, of providing financial and logistical assistance to al-Qaeda and the Taliban. Wasn't that what Saddam was supposed to be doing? Yeah. I have strong reservations about some of the people still operating within the intelligence services, and we need reforms to get rid of them, Ms. Bhutto told the Sunday Telegraph. Our friend, ladies and gentlemen, Pakistan. There is a series of reports, you know, a smattering, I should say, from New Jersey, from Wales in the United Kingdom, from New York, just a smattering, as I say, of reports about schools that are banning Halloween celebrations for various reasons this year. And we will check in with the one guy who is most likely to be making hay out of that situation next, in moments here on the show.
You're never going to believe this in a million years segment on the O'Reilly Factor. Another front opens up in the secular progressive war against traditional American values. And here to bring us up to date is our good friend John Gibson, author of the startling new book, The War Against Halloween. John, welcome back to The Factor.
Hi, Bill. Good to be back on the set. I remember when I used to guest host for you.
Mm-hmm. That was back before Michelle Malkin got into the union. John, what's going on with the war on Halloween?
Bill, it's frightening, and not zombie at your front door begging for candy frightening. Mm. All across America, our schools are being pressured and pressurized into giving up Halloween celebrations. In some cases, they just cancel the occasion altogether. In other, even more frightening cases, they're replacing Halloween with those Weasley Autumn Festival celebrations.
Mm-hmm. Which basically is celebrating nothing.
Nothing at all.
I mean, what do you wear at an autumn festival celebration? A costume made of dried leaves? I mean, come on. This is getting ridiculous. John, you've been covering this story ever since your last book, The War on Groundhog Day. Mm-hmm. What's their beef with Halloween? Is this the conservative Christians unhappy that the holiday is supposedly connected with devil worship? Because that's a crock. I mean, I've seen kids trick-or-treating and dressing up in scary costumes for my whole life. Nobody ever even mentions Satan.
Well, Bill, you know, according to Christian conservatives, you don't have to mention Satan to be doing his business.
No, that's a good point.
But really, this is far more the doing of our old friends, the secular progressives.
Uh-huh. Well, these are the nutballs that want to get every reference to any part of any religion out of our national life. And what are the SPs, John? What do they got against Halloween?
Well, Bill, as you know, it originates in the Christian calendar. And besides, if there's no religion, there's no devil.
But, John, isn't the whole Halloween thing more about death? I mean, doesn't that connect to the Day of the Dead thing down in Mexico? I mean, not even the secular progressives can deny there's such a thing as death, or can they?
Wouldn't put past them, Bill. You see, what my sources have revealed to me in exclusive interviews that they wouldn't allow me to tape is that secular progressives actually manipulated the Christian conservatives into joining the war on Halloween. There are pamphlets, Bill, about the demonic implications of the holiday that have been handed out at some churches throughout the Midwest. And those pamphlets were printed, Bill, in San Francisco.
Oh, you gotta be kidding me. That's such a haven for SPs. I'm amazed they still allow churches to have bingo. Now, John, how far is this craziness going? I mean, I understand they're not going to let kids dress in costumes in certain schools. But what about jack-o'-lanterns?
Oh, pumpkins are very much in the crosshairs of these folks, Bill. Some anti-Halloween groups are actually demanding that pumpkins be replaced with much smaller members of the squash family.
Yeah, which have got to be hell to carve.
You said it.
Well, you see, that's obviously part of their plan, just to wipe out the whole American tradition of carving faces in the huge vegetables.
It's definitely on their hit list, Bill. My sources can confirm that. And as for trick-or-treating, Bill...
Yeah, this I really don't want to hear.
Some of these groups are pushing for a ban on costumes and just having kids going around the neighborhood in their PJs.
All right, now you see, ladies and gentlemen, that's where this whole thing is going. Kids in their PJs marching through your neighborhood demanding no candy, no fruit, no nothing.
Not only not demanding anything, Bill, actually having the kids hand out pamphlets on global warming.
Well, that sounds like fun for the kids. So really, John, in addition to everything else that's under attack from the secular progressives, they're against American children having fun.
Sure looks like it, Bill.
Although I'll bet if Islam had a Halloween-type holiday, they'd have no problem with celebrating that in the schools. See, John, if you dig a little deeper, you'll find that the secular progressives are really in cahoots with the Islamo-fascists.
Bill, I don't want to pat myself on my own horn here, but I think I've dug pretty deep.
All right, John, what about the rest of the media? They seem to be ignoring the story of the attack on Halloween, don't they?
Well, Bill, you know, ask yourself this question. How much advertising do you see for Halloween-related activities? You know, not very much. If the corrupt media can afford to ignore the attacks on a much more lucrative holiday like Christmas, they sure can afford to keep the lid on the attacks on this one.
All right, John, I'll give you the last word. What is it that we can do to fight back against these attacks against the traditional American celebration of Halloween?
I'm going to be tackling that very question, Bill, in my next book, The War Against Halloween. Should be out by Easter.
John Gibson, always a pleasure, sir. Next up on The Fact and an Eye, why Ann Coulter really is a perfected Jew.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the inspectors general. This is a good one. Despite hopes the military surge in Iraq would encourage economic and political headway and sap the strength of the insurgency, very little lasting progress has been achieved. This, according to the U.S. Inspector General for Iraqi Reconstruction. That pesky guy, whose office the administration wanted to abolish a couple of years ago, for obvious reasons. The study is based on the assessments of dozens of U.S. military and civilian officials working at local levels across Iraq, and it runs counter to the optimistic forecast by General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker. It said, with the exception of Anbar Province, there's been little progress toward political reconciliation. Withdrawal of U.S. troops, it does add, would produce open battlegrounds of ethnic cleansing in some Baghdad neighborhoods and elsewhere. Instead of charting progress, the new report warns Iraq will require years of steady engagement before there's significant progress in providing Iraqis with power and clean water, jobs, health resources, and government that works, just like Louisiana. Iraq's complex and overlapping sectarian, political, and ethnic conflicts, as well as the difficult security situation, continue to hinder progress in promoting economic development, rule of law, and political reconciliation. And at the Department of Homeland Security, private employees, contract employees, help write job descriptions for new workers at Homeland Security headquarters. They also sign letters that officially offer employment, and they meet new hires on their first day on the job. About the only thing they don't do, according to a critical new congressional audit, is swear in the new employees. Across several of Homeland Security's most troubled projects, contractors are so enmeshed in the department's work that they oversee other contractors. privatizing your government, ladies and gentlemen. We're making good progress. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at this same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network. Think of it. Around the world via your computer at two different locations on the internet, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on Sirius and XM satellite radio. Long may they remain separate. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow. Available as a free podcast on kcrw.com. And it would be just like nobody squeezing or hugging that shoulder. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. You can email the host of this program and find out the music playlist of this broadcast, as well as so much more at harryshearer.com. And I'll see you videophonically between now and next week at www.mydamnchannel.com. Tip of the LeShow Chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks and to Doug Patterson here at the Seattle studios of KXOT. Tell you where I'm going to be this coming week in Boston, but show's not heard there. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, community recognized around the world as, despite better counting, the home of the homeless.